underneath the blouse rail, Lorna, look underneath the blouse rail, they said. When I reached the blouse rail I stood there looking at all these women searching through the blouses, frantic to find what they wanted and practically fighting over things. I was shocked that they were so aggressive. The little angels had said underneath the rail, so I knew where to look. I knew there had to be a young child under there. I was pushing my way in between the women, excusing myself and pretending to tidy the blouses, when I felt a little hand touch my ankle. I bent down, pushing some women away, and picked up a little child. I walked away from the crowd, and within no time at all the mother came over and told me it was her child I was holding. I said that this was a very dangerous place to leave a young child unattended, but she ignored me, took the child from my arms and walked away. The two little angels looked very sad. I said to them, "That mother just isn't listening." The two little angels asked me to follow this mother and child and keep an eye on her. The little angels also followed them and I could see the mother's guardian angel whispering in her ear. I tried to look out for them, but it was very difficult as customers were constantly asking me for help. There was pandemonium everywhere. Every chance I got I would look for the mother and her child, and the little angels helped me by sending up a beam of light. Whenever I saw this beam of light I felt relieved. Suddenly, the little angels were pulling at my clothes again. "Come quickly. Something is about to happen and we may not be able to stop it if the mother doesn't listen to us," they said. I followed the little angels as quickly as I could. To my amazement, they left a trail of sparkling light behind them as they disappeared into the crowd. I could actually see through the crowd because, from the waist down, they had become transparent tome. In amongst this crowd of women I could see where the little child was standing. As I approached I called out, "Be careful of that child." The women around the rail were so engrossed in their search for a bargain that they did not hear my words, they were not listening. I could see what was about to happen, but I could not prevent it. I wanted to reach out, I wanted to stop it. Many hands were pulling garments from hangers this way and that and, in doing so, one of the women accidentally pulled a hanger across the child's face, catching the corner of the child's eye and pulling it from its socket. I saw one of the little angels put a hand up to the child's eye. Even though the eye was out of the socket, the angel's touch prevented the hanger from ripping the eye away altogether. The child started to scream, and when the mother saw what had happened she screamed too, grabbed her child and held her in her arms. I reached the mother and child and stretched out and touched her, asking God to intercede and save her eye. A voice cried out, "Somebody call for an ambulance." It was very hard to look at the child, with her eye hanging out of its socket and the little angels holding the eye to prevent the threads from breaking. To see such caring and tenderness is to know that we are loved, even at difficult times when we think nobody cares, that nobody loves us. The angels are there. Always remember, angels' love is unconditional. The child continued to scream and the manager rushed over and took the mother and child up to the office. I heard later that they had been able to save her eye. Joe and I were falling in love and we continued to grow closer. I started to go to Joe's mother's house most evenings after work. She always gave me a great welcome and made me feel part of the family. She was a tall, well-built woman with curly hair and she always had a smile on her face. I talked with her a lot. I would sit at her kitchen table while she worked away and she would never let me lift a hand. I loved talking with her. One particular conversation made me feel very happy. She told me she was glad that Joe had met such a nice young woman, that this was something she had always prayed for and that she would love to see the two of us get married and have children. She told me that to see her younger son settled with a wife would leave her with no worries. She told me not to tell him this, though, that it was only between her and me. Joe would come home to his mother's about an hour after me and we would all have dinner together. Joe's mother was a great cook and I loved her bacon and cabbage and apple tarts. After dinner, Joe and I would go to the bus stop, hoping to catch the 10 o'clock bus into the city and then another bus to Slip, where I lived. When I think of it now, we spent an awful lot of time traveling on buses. I still hadn't told my parents about Joe, although we had now been going out together for more than a year. Strange as it may seem, my mother never asked where I was in the evenings. Perhaps she presumed I was working late all the time. I was a little apprehensive of what DA might think, whether he would approve or not, but I did know that DA really liked Joe. My big fear was what my mother would say when she found out. It was normal practice to work later, restocking the rails one or two nights a week. We worked out roster for a 2-week period and I usually worked Thursdays and Fridays. Some of the girls didn't want to work Fridays, but I didn't mind because I saw Joe most evenings, and he often had to work late on a Friday, too. Sometimes I would also work on Wednesday evenings, depending on how busy the store was. Often I would find Mark working late on the same evenings as me. The angel of death was always visible to me, constantly holding on to Mark's soul. Mark was so happy he just beamed with life, but in my conversations with the angels they told me they had lost the battle. One day I was working at the cash register with Valerie, one of the girls that I was friendly with, folding clothes and putting them into bags, and Mark did something he had never done before. He came over to talk to us. He told us all about his girlfriend, how she was from Northern Ireland and he was going to see her at the weekend. He told us that he was crazy about her, that she was the best thing that ever happened to him and that in the future he hoped to marry her. I saw his beautiful angel holding him as if he were the most precious human being in the world and I started to tremble. The angel of death did not want to take Mark, but he would be left with no choice because people were not listening to their angels. I could hear the angel clearly speaking to me. I could have reached out and touched the angel of death as well as Mark, but I was told not to. Then Mark said he had to go. I turned to Valerie and told her I had to go to the loo. I ran out of the shop, out the back door and into the loo. I sat there and cried. Eventually, I plucked up the courage to go back to work, giving out to the angels all the time because I felt so sad and so helpless. After I'd been working in the store about a year, I was asked to work late one day, and I agreed. I knew I had to be there. Mark was working late as well. As I worked, I watched Mark and his angel and I prayed. I could feel Mark's great joy and happiness, the great love he had for his girlfriend. I felt so sure that he was now engaged, that he was imagining his future with his girlfriend. That's what he was living for. Everyone else had gone home, only the floor manager, Mark and I were left. The manager came up to me and asked if I was finished. I told him I needed about 5 minutes. When I finished stocking the rails, I started to walk towards the cloakroom. I looked back to see Mark as he worked at the handbag counter. I hurried down the stairs to the cloakroom to get my coat, and then went back up the stairs quickly in the hope of getting another glimpse of Mark. I did as he was talking to the manager. I knew that would be the last time I would ever see him. The shop door closed behind me. As I walked out through the car park and through the lanes at the back of the department store, I was giving out to the angels. I felt so helpless. All of a sudden, angels appeared in a brilliant light, surrounded me and reached in and took my soul from my body. From that moment on, I remember nothing. I don't remember my journey home or anything else that evening. Waking up the next morning, I knew that the angels had transported my soul so that I could be with Mark spiritually, leaving my body and soul connected by a thread. As I got out of the bed the next morning, my body felt so light that I could hardly feel the floor beneath my feet. I felt very still and quiet in myself. I got dressed slowly and went downstairs. I felt very weak and unwell. In the kitchen, Mum asked if I was okay and told me that I looked very pale. I poured myself a cup of tea, took a slice of toast and went out into the back garden, tea and toast in hand, to check on my pet rabbit. This was only an excuse. I did not want to worry Mum. I said goodbye to her and headed down the road to the bus, and then I noticed two angels, one at either side of me. They were carrying me. I smiled and said, "Thank you, angels. Please help me to feel a little bit better, physically, or I won't make it through the day." I could hear the angels whispering in my ear, "Don't worry, Lorna. We're taking care of you. There were a dozen or more people waiting for the bus as I walked across the road to the bus stop. As I approached it, I was saying to the angels, please let me get a seat. I won't be able to stand. Within minutes the bus arrived. It was crowded, but I got a seat at the very back. I fell asleep and was awoken by rustling. The man sitting directly in front of me was reading the morning paper. The headline read, young man gunned down in Dublin City. I closed my eyes, I was devastated. When the bus reached the terminus, I got off with a crowd and walked across the bridge towards Mary Street. I kept walking, and as I was passing a shop called Hector Gray's, there was a radio blaring. I heard the newscaster saying a young man has been gunned down. I started to run, and as I entered the lane alongside the department store, the tears were running down my cheeks. There was no one else around. To my horror, I saw chalk marks on the ground and torn yellow tape. This is where Mark had been murdered, where he had been gunned down. There was no one there, no police, nobody. I felt as if nobody cared. I felt so cold and completely overwhelmed. Everyone at work was talking about it. I kept myself away from all of them so I wouldn't have to listen. I couldn't avoid it, though. People thought it was a sectarian killing, perhaps because of his girlfriend in Northern Ireland. One thing I do know about Mark, though, is that he went straight to heaven. Remember, I had seen his soul when the angel stooped over and touched it. His soul was beautiful, blue crystal clear without a stain. When he died, the angels were there with him, and especially the angel of death. As were some members of his family that had gone before him, and they all gently took Mark straight to heaven. When lunchtime came that day, I called Joe and asked him to meet me after work at the back entrance to the store. I told him that I was off work the next day and we could go out that night. I still felt terrible and I needed his arm around me, to make me feel a little better. I was also very weak and felt unable to walk as far as the bus stop. I've never forgotten Mark. Chapter 10. The Bombers. Joe and I loved the weekends. Every 4 weeks I would have a long weekend off work, and Joe arranged with Dia to have those weekends off too, whenever he could. I teased him that he was lucky to work for my father. We always planned the weekends ahead of time. Some of our favorite places to go were the Dublin Mountains, the Wicklow Mountains and Britta's Bay, a beautiful beach along the coast, south of Dublin. Traveling on the bus home with Joe one evening, he said, how about going to the Sally Gap in the Wicklow Mountains this weekend? So, when Sunday morning came round, Joe arrived at my house at 9 o'clock sharp. I met him across the road, around the corner, where my family couldn't see us. I had packed a picnic of ham and cheese sandwiches, apples and a bar of chocolate. He gave me a big kiss and said, let's go, and we headed straight down to the bus stop just in time, too, as the bus was coming. When the bus reached the Wicklow Mountains, everyone got off and seemed to be walking in the same direction as us. I was surprised to see so many couples and families with children. I said to Joe that I didn't realize this area was so popular. That day we walked about a mile to an area high up and full of enormous rocks. It was fabulous, mountains all around us, the fresh air so clear and crisp. We clambered over the big rocks, something I loved doing, but Joe had to help me frequently as they were gigantic and I am tiny, but they were no problem for Joe. We had a lot of fun. We sat down on one of the big rocks and had our picnic, and we talked for hours, sitting there, soaking up the sun, admiring the beauty of the mountains. Eventually, we packed what was left of our picnic into the bag. Joe took the bag from me and put his arms around me. As we were about to climb down off the rock, something happened which was a great surprise to me. Joe's angel appeared behind him, to his right-hand side and about one step behind him. I smiled at the angel and it said, Lorna, see where the sun is shining on that little lake. Go there. What is that great smile for? I couldn't tell him that I was smiling at his angel. I still hadn't got up the courage to tell him that I could see angels and other things. I was afraid of his reaction. Look over there, I said, where the light from the sun is shining on that small group of trees and rocks. Is that a tiny little lake I see? How come we didn't see that before now? Asks Joe. We walked in the direction of the little lake, and when we reached it we met a couple who were having a picnic and they invited us to share a cup of tea with them. We all sat together and talked and laughed on the shore of the little lake. The angels allowed me to see beautiful things that day. It would have been wonderful if I had been allowed to share my secret with Joe then, and if the angels had allowed him to have seen what followed, but it was not to be. The lake was like a sheet of glass, the reflections of the trees bounced off the water, as did that of a kingfisher who flew across the lake. I could see another kingfisher moving under the water, then its reflection as it rose out of the water, showing an iridescent flash of the colors of the rainbow. It bounced up, breaking through the surface of the lake, causing a ripple and almost touching the end of the other bird's tail. It looked like there were more than one bird, it was as if there were a multitude of birds flying behind. Then the angels said, "Lorna, it's time to go." I told Joe it was starting to get dark and that we had better head back. The couple with us said that they had a compass and knew a different way back and they suggested we should walk together. We did. I don't know how long it took us to get back to the bus stop, but I was exhausted when we did. Joe, gentleman as ever, came all the way to my front door, gave me a goodnight kiss on the cheek and ran down to catch the ghost bus back into Dublin. I asked the angels to protect Joe so he would get home safely. I also asked the angels to keep Joe well. Joe appeared to be full of beans, full of energy, but I could see the organs of his body were starting to become diseased. They had shriveled slightly in size and seemed to have a grey look about them. The change was slight, but it was clear to me. I feared this was the beginning of the ill health that Elijah had spoken about. I have never forgotten the day my mother found out that I was going out with Joe. It was a day I was off work. I did a few jobs around the house for Mum and spent some time with my rabbit, Isabel. My sister Emma was there that afternoon too, and, as usual, Mum more or less ignored me. All of my life I have noticed if I walked into the room when one of my sisters or brothers were talking with my mum, they would stop talking. If I stayed in the room or sat down and joined them, the conversation would stop altogether. Sometimes I felt a little sad that my family did not want to share with me. Joe and I had a date at 6:30, so later that afternoon I came in from the garden to get ready. Mum was in the kitchen and she asked me where I was going. I told her I was going to catch the 5 o'clock bus and continued on through the hall and up the stairs. When I was in the bedroom, I heard Mum and my sister coming up the stairs. I shared the bedroom with my sister, so I thought she was going to come in, but she didn't. They went into Mum's bedroom. I could hear them talking, but I was too excited about meeting Joe to take any notice. Now I realize that Mum must have been quizzing Emma. As I came out of the bedroom, they were both standing on the landing. Emma looked at me guiltily. "What's wrong?" I asked. Mum screamed at me, "Where do you think you're going?" I was shocked. I had never seen Mum this way before. I told her I was going to Dublin. Mum shouted back at me, demanding to know was it true that I was going out with one of the petrol pump attendants in my DA's garage? Mum was going ballistic, "You're going out with that Joe. How long has this been going on for? I want to know. It ends right now." Mum was extremely upset. I looked at her and said in a very clear voice, "I have been going out with Joe for months now and I'm going to continue to go out with him. Now I'm going to meet him." As I turned to go down the stairs, Mum grabbed my arm tightly and started to pull at me, still shouting, "How dare you shame us by going out with someone lower class?" I was really shocked at how upset she was. This was a part of my mother that I had never seen before. To her mind, Joe was beneath us. I just looked at Mum and continued down the stairs. She held my arm tightly, pulling at me and saying, "You are not going for that bus to meet that young man, Joe." I could see Mum's guardian angel standing behind her, in tears. Some of the teardrops were falling onto Mum's head. DA was doing well now and they had a house of their own. And Mum had forgotten that we as a family had once been homeless, and then had considered ourselves lucky to be given a corporation house. We had been poor, like so many other families in Ireland at that time. Perhaps what made it worse for Mum was that she came from a well-off family. They had felt that she had married beneath her. Now she held on to me so tightly that I had to be extremely firm with her. Let go of my arm, you're hurting me. I don't want to miss the bus. You'll have to accept the fact that Joe and I are going out together. Mum's beautiful angel bent over her and embraced her whole body, and just then Mum let go of my arm. I pulled away, saying, "Mum, I love you." I continued down the stairs, out the hall door and ran down the road to the bus. As I sat on the bus, I thought about my mum and her guardian angel. Joe was standing at the bus stop in Dublin, waiting for me. I was so happy to see him that I gave him a big hug, but I never told him how upset I was. I never ray then nor ever ray told Joe what Mum had said, because I knew it would hurt him. We strolled in the direction of a nearby pub, Maguire's, which had a music night. I always loved hearing music. Joe had a pint of Guinness, I seldom drank alcohol and had a 7-Up. Slowly the music and Joe's arm around me calmed me down, and I almost forgot about my mother. A few days later, DA spoke Tom. "I hear from your mum that you and Joe are a couple." He said he had noticed something between us, but had no idea we were actually going out together. God. You kept that a big secret. DA said that all that mattered was that I was happy. DA did a lot for Joe. He helped him to learn the business and encouraged him to move on in life, which was great for us. Mum never spoke to me again about what happened that day. It was as if it had never happened. Sometimes the angels prepare me for things that are going to happen, sometimes they give me visions, and when this happens, everything around me just vanishes. It's like being transported to another time and place. Sometimes it is like having a flickering television screen in front of me, other times it's like a film going very fast. Sometimes this is very difficult for me because I am unable to understand what is happening. The film might stop for a brief second, then I might see a person or a place. Visions happen in many different ways. One spring morning, when the weather should have been getting brighter and sunnier, I got out of bed and dressed for work. I drew back the curtains of my bedroom window and looked out. Everything seemed to have a touch of grey about it. It was as if grey paint was being sprayed into the atmosphere and was covering everybody and everything. I stood there for a moment, looking out the window. I saw a neighbour coming out of his house, saying goodbye to his wife at the door, walking towards his car and driving away. His car and everything around him had a touch of grey. Another car came down the road and it too was covered in the same greyness. A young man ran past the house, and although the atmosphere around him danced, it was also grey. I went downstairs, made myself some tea and gave Tiger, the cat, some milk. As I left for work I shouted goodbye up the stairs. Walking down to the bus stop I called my angels, but they did not appear to me physically. I asked them, "Why does everything look so strange?" "Don't worry, we are protecting you," they whispered. As I approached the main road, I saw the bus coming and I ran to catch it. The bus was crowded but I managed to get a seat. I felt very strange. I was starting to feel stillness and silence creeping up on me. I looked at the people on the bus. They, too, had that touch of grey about them. Even the bus itself did not feel right. Nothing looked real. When the bus pulled into the terminus, on the quays by the River Liffey, I called my angels again. They didn't answer me. As I walked through the doors at the back entrance to work, I felt so light it was like everything was in slow motion. I saw some staff and managers already working. Only then did I notice that nobody had an angel with them, not even on the bus. I was shocked. I felt myself tremble. The department store also looked grey. I went down to the cloakroom, hoping I would see guardian angels with some of the girls I worked with, but the cloakroom looked the same as in the store. Other girls had no angels with them either, even though I knew they must be there. I kept calling on my angels, but they didn't seem to be answering me. I left the cloakroom and went upstairs to the shop floor. I stood in the fashion department, at one of the rails looking towards the main entrance. I watched the manager of the store and a security guard open the doors and saw the customers start to walk into the store. Slowly, I started to see guardian angels with people, but the angels did not look their usual selves. Their radiance had disappeared and they were dull. They seemed to be covered in that same gray that filled the atmosphere. I felt a tap on my shoulder. Angel Michael was standing there beside me, smiling. He was looking as radiant as ever. I asked Michael what was wrong. "This is frightening me. I never saw this happen to angels before. What is that grayness? It's literally in everything and everywhere." "Lorna, it is going to be like this for a while," Angel Michael replied. "We are going to keep you in a spiritual state to protect you. You will still go to work, go home and do all the usual activities, but things won't feel quite real to you." "Michael," I said, "nothing looks real, even now. I can feel the changes physically. I feel so light, still and quiet within myself. It has been getting stronger as the day has gone on. That grayness is literally in everything. It's horrible outside on the street." I turned and looked at him. "Michael, can you and the angels not protect everyone out there, the same way that you are protecting me?"
"No, Lorna," Michael replied. "Sometimes you are protected differently. That will have to remain a mystery until it's time for us to take your soul. No more questions now, Lorna. Just listen to what I have to say. When you get into work every morning, you must not leave the store. Only do so when it's time to go home, and then you must head straight for the bus. Understand?" Just then, Valerie called me and Michael disappeared. I walked up towards the cash register where she was standing with Pauline and two other girls. We were chatting about what needed to be done when the floor manager came over to us.
"Good morning, girls," he said. "I don't want to frighten you, but the management has informed me that we must be on the lookout for suspicious packages, like a paper bag or a packet of cigarettes. Last night one of the cleaners in another store found a packet that looked like cigarettes, but was actually a firebomb. When we close this evening I want you girls to search the rails of garments and check the changing rooms for anything suspicious. If you find anything you should call me straight away. Don't forget to check in pockets of garments. We don't want the store to burn down and for all of us to lose our jobs." As the floor manager walked away I said to myself, "So that is what is wrong." I walked into one of the customers' changing rooms where I called Michael, and he appeared.
"Why didn't you tell me about the firebombs?" I asked.
Angel Michael never answered my question. Instead he reached out and put his hand on my head and all the concern and worry was taken away from me. I really don't remember much about the next few weeks. It was as if I was in a dream, in another time and place. Joe was very concerned. He would say, "You are not yourself. You are not talking. You seem to be somewhere else." He would ask, "Have I done something wrong? Don't you love me anymore?"
"I'm just tired," I would reply. "I'll be okay in a little while. Don't worry." It was very hard for both of us that I couldn't share this with him, but then the bombs went off. I was not conscious of the day of the week, time was of no consequence, I was oblivious to it. Standing at the rails in the department store, late one afternoon, I was startled by muffled sounds nearby. As I write this I find myself reliving the experience of what happened that day. I am beside a bus, holding a man in my arms as he dies. I am watching angels gathering souls that are leaving human bodies, seeing some little souls and talking with them as if nothing has happened. I am watching angels kneeling beside people, holding them in their arms, being with them, whispering in their ears that they will be all right. I can see people running out of shops, angels shouting for help and trying to get the attention of people passing by. It is horrific. I cannot feel my human body. It's as if I am in two places at the same time, out on the streets of Dublin, where it is all happening, and at the same time in the department store standing at a rail of garments.
I am moving along the streets without my feet seeming to touch the ground. There is debris flying everywhere, broken glass, people screaming and crying, souls leaving their bodies.